Big show for you here today. It is the week 16 recap. We've got a packed show for you here today. I start off with a solo recap of Sunday Night Football. Big Patriots comeback win here. Drake May career high in passing yards. Stephon Diggs shows up, and we got to ask some questions about the Baltimore Ravens. Then Chris Allen joins the show for the games we care about most, the boom and bust player of the week, the games we sort of care about, and the games that could have been an email. Tons to get into, tons to unpack. All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. What's going on, everybody? I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast. And it is a hell of a day to talk ball. Week 16 was epic. Tons of stuff to get into. We've got Chris Allen joining the show in just a moment to break down everything that we saw from both the Saturday games, the Sunday games. Yes, it's that time of the year when there's just games all the time. So much good football to talk about. We're going to get to Chris in just a moment. But before we get to that, as always, we will start with a solo recap of Sunday Night Football here. Patriots 28, Ravens 24. A lot to talk about, a lot to chew on from this game. It was a fourth quarter to remember for Drake May and the New England Patriots. They're on their way to the playoffs for the first time since 2021. So congratulations to all of you long-suffering New England fans. You're back. You're back in the good graces of the NFL. You've got a great coach again. You got a great quarterback again. You look like you're sustained for a long playoff run here coming up. Well, at least maybe a long playoff run this year, but certainly a long run of playoff seasons here coming up with this version of the New England Patriots. I got a lot of faith in what they're building there. And it starts with number 10. It starts with the quarterback here. Like I said, a fourth quarter to remember for Drake May. He is now undefeated in his career as a starter in primetime games. First quarterback to win each of their four career primetime starts since Lamar Jackson, who was theoretically on the other side of the field tonight. So, as mentioned, this game started off pretty slow. Was pretty concerned, honestly, with the way New England's offense looked. It was a little sloppy at first. Trevian Henderson goes out in this game very, very early with a concussion, a head injury, banged the back of his head on the turf coming down. That wasn't great, so you get concerned about the lack of explosiveness in the run game. You know, Stephon Diggs was having some moments. We'll talk about him in just a second, but there did feel like a lack of cohesion from the offense very early on, and yet they were able to keep into this game, just kind of hang around. And then in the fourth quarter, as mentioned, it really was when things opened up for the New England Patriots, and the rest is history. Drake May, 380 yards in this game. That is a career high for him. And, you know, he's definitely going to be making some moves in the MVP discussion. I still think, for me, it's Matthew Stafford's award to lose. As we're showing here, that's kind of what the odds are at this stage. But that being said, Drake May can, you know, make a push here. There's no question about that. If they end up being the number one seed in the AFC, typically the award goes to the best team's quarterback, you know, especially if they're having one of those efficiency type of seasons. Drake May's efficiency metrics have been great all season long. If the Patriots end up as the number one seed in the AFC because they win their next two games and a few other things break their way, which is totally possible. Mathematically, that is a thing that can happen. Sure, could happen, especially if the Rams don't even win their division. Again, you can quibble, you can argue if that's right. It's just how this works sometimes. So Drake May is certainly still alive in the MVP race. And again, he showed you tonight why that is the case. For me, some of the plays that were huge in this one from Drake May, you had the go route touchdown to Kyle Williams. Man, Kyle Williams is going to be a player for this team. He's not a full-time guy in this offense right now. He is pushing Kayshon Boutte a little bit for playing time. Kyle Williams runs around on 20% of the dropbacks. Kayshon Boutte, 64%. That was second among wide receivers behind Diggs. Again, we'll get to Diggs in just a moment. He has carved out a little bit of a role there because previously at the beginning of the year, even into the middle of the season, it was essentially just Kyle Williams was deep in the rotation. He would maybe run a couple of routes per game, and Kayshon Boutte was the every single down X receiver. That's not the case anymore, man. Like, they are getting Kyle Williams some legit run in this wide receiver room, and primarily as an outside on the line of scrimmage ISO receiver. I think that Williams can do more than that. I mean, it's great to see him have these big wins down the football field on the go routes. He has real speed. He has real ball tracking ability. I do think he could be the type of small receiver who is more than just a gimmicky guy, has to line up in the slot. I think he's got the route running chops for that. Now, I've said that about plenty of smaller receivers and been wrong about that. They've been kind of pigeonholed in these three wide receiver looks. Williams, though, so far has played as that X receiver, and I think in time he could do more than that. I think Kayshon Booty's a guy who could do a little bit more if he moved away from X receiver as well. So it will be really interesting to think about if the future of this wide receiver room is Booty and Kyle Williams. I think they'll add other bodies along the way whenever Diggs' time with the team comes to an end. But it does seem that they're grooming Kyle Williams for more and more. They're putting more on his plate. So from a dynasty standpoint, he is somebody that I remain very optimistic about. So that was a big play. The other one was the fourth down conversion late in the game to Stephon Diggs. There were a number of just big plays from Diggs tonight that just, I don't know what it is. Like, how do we pin the Steph Diggs usage down? I've talked about this a lot. I talked about it on Fantasy Football Live this morning. There's no discernible pattern to Diggs in terms of when is he going to be a full-time player and when is he not going to be. In this game, he runs around on 66% of the dropbacks, which, you know, that's still not full-time receiver work, but it's more than 55%, which is what he was in week 15 coming out of the bye. So maybe that's something. It is interesting, as we're showing this tweet from Brian Hines, some of his best performances of the season, really his three 100-yard games, have all come in primetime. Sunday Night Football against the Bills, 10 catches, 146 yards. Thursday Night Football against the Jets, 9 catches for 105 yards. Sunday Night Football tonight here, 9 catches, 138 yards. And so maybe there is just, I don't know, they're saving him for these big primetime moments. Maybe he wants to show his best on primetime. I have no idea. Maybe it's just random. Maybe it's just a coincidence. That's totally possible too. Because only one of those games, the Jets game in week 11, I mean the freaking Jets in week 11, they win that game 27-14. Diggs runs a route on 89% of the dropbacks, season high. The only other game he's been above 80% was week 4 against, at that point, the lowly Carolina Panthers. Can't say that about the Panthers anymore. NFC South division leaders, can't take it away from them. So, regardless of whether you can play him in fantasy and when you can, if you can predict the big games, which I have struggled to do, I've been wrong about it a lot this year. When are the big games coming? When is the full time playing time coming? I haven't been able to pin that down at any point. Regardless of that, man, it is cool to see him balling right now. It's having these big moments for a team that so clearly needs a guy who can quickly separate, can quickly get open, can make plays after the catch with the ball in his hands. In this particular game, he averaged 5.1 yards after catch per reception. Huge to see that there. He just keeps the chains moving here for this team. He keeps them on schedule. He, again, is reliable. He's where he needs to be. He's clearly a tenacious and fiery leader for this team as well. Running out the back door of the damn medical tent or whatever it was tonight because he wanted to be in that game so bad. This is a big game for the Patriots, and Diggs showing up here is huge for them. It's if you have Drake May as your fantasy quarterback, which, well, boy, I have one team where I have Drake May and Lamar Jackson as my two quarterbacks in Superflex. And I'll tell you what, when Drake got a little bit rolled up on there and he limped off the field, I was feeling pretty nervous. I was feeling uncomfortable. Your boy was not having a good time in that moment. Regardless, if you got Drake May as a fantasy quarterback, you're happy that Stephon Diggs has these big moments, because that's when you see the best performance out of this whole passing game, man. So it's great to see Diggs right now playing at the level he is. He is ninth in the NFL in yards per route run on the season, 2.32, targeted on 25% of his routes. He's the only guy, other than, you know, injury-affected players, in the top, you know, like 15, 20 yards per route run players who are part-time guys who are not really on the field every single snap. I mean, these guys that are over 2.0, it's only 14 wide receivers in the NFL right now. The only one of them who is a rotational option is Stephon Diggs. So on a per route basis, when he's on the field, he is impacting the team at a wide receiver one level. Is he a true wide receiver one anymore? You know, I don't think he is the same guy that he was at the beginning, obviously, of his NFL career, his peak years with Buffalo. You know, if you're a reception perception longtime backer, you know that Diggs was one of my early flag plants. I don't know that he's necessarily playing at that level right now, but he's playing at a level where he can be a huge driving force for one of the most efficient passing games in the NFL. Again, I've gotten this wrong over and over and over again, so feel free to completely ignore me about this. But these next 2 weeks against division rivals, Jets, Dolphins, maybe we'll see more and more of Diggs. Maybe we won't, and it'll be in the playoffs that we see Diggs being a full-time 80% route participation player, perhaps. I have no idea. All I know is, so far, they've gotten a lot out of Stephon Diggs. It's been a great signing for this Patriots team. Elsewhere on New England, Ramondre Stevenson has some big runs for this one with Tre'Mion Henderson obviously leaving this game. 5 carries for 3 yards for Henderson before he left. 8 carries for 51 yards for Ramondre Stevenson. Had a 21 long yard run there. He also made a couple of plays as a receiver. So you ended up with a pretty good night out of Ramondre Stevenson. It's a shame, certainly, if you started Tre'Mion Henderson and you did not get a full game out of him here. You have to wonder what could have happened on that one. So the Patriots are going to the playoffs. The Patriots have a shot to get the number one seed. They have one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL in Drake May. What's old is new again. What's new is on the Ravens side of things, they are a very long shot to get into the playoffs at this point. Essentially, what has to happen is that the Ravens need to win out and that they have to hope that the Steelers lose to the Browns in week 17. I don't feel great about that. You guys feel good about that? Number one, I don't even know if the Ravens could beat the Packers. The fight in Malik Willis's on Saturday night this upcoming week. Don't know if I feel great about that. Although the Packers certainly have a litany of injury questions they have to answer at this point beyond just Jordan Love's availability and the lack of Micah Parsons for the rest of the year. So that will be an interesting game to break down. Again, that is on Saturday coming up here. Beyond that, though, I mean, the Steelers, I know that Mike Tomlin every now and again is going to drop a weird game, but losing to the Browns, Shedeur Sanders and the guys in week 17, don't know if I see that one. So that's what the Ravens need. They also need their quarterback to be healthy, and he is not healthy. Lamar Jackson leaves this game after 10 pass attempts and 2 runs to a back injury, leaves the game here. And I thought Lamar looked pretty good before that back injury, but you could tell right away after taking a hit, he was uncomfortable. It's just been one of those years for Lamar Jackson and the Ravens. One injury after another, just a lot of frustration, super annoying. Sometimes it just happens. I don't know that there's any big grand takeaway there. He's had a bad luck of injury run here. Again, I don't have some grand proclamation there. It's really frustrating if you have Lamar Jackson. Like I said, I've got a team with Lamar Jackson. I'm already putting advanced waiver claims in for Malik Willis. I've got Quinn Ewers stashed on the bench because it's super flex league and this is how you have to operate. So I don't know. That makes me depressed to think about playing either of those guys in a fantasy football champion matchup. But it might have to happen if Lamar Jackson's not going to play next week. You'd imagine with their playoff hopes, dwindling, he will get out there and play, but he has to be physically right to do it. And certainly tonight he was ruled out and we didn't see him. So I'm not sure we're getting Lamar Jackson next week. Elsewhere on the Ravens roster, talk about the passing game here real quick. You know, Tyler Huntley, it's going to be the type of attack that you would expect with Tyler Huntley. It's going to be a lot of get the ball out quick, all that type of stuff. We did get a big game out of Zay Flowers, 7 catches on 7 targets, 84 yards, and then he ran in an 18-yard run as well for a touchdown. That was great to see. However, his fumble on what was ultimately the Ravens' final drive of the game, it ended it. It was over after that. And God, Zay is just a weird player to figure out, man. Because like you look up the final or you look up the full league results right now. I mentioned Stephon Diggs is 9th in the NFL in yards per route run. Zay Flowers is 6th. And yet this is his 3rd lost fumble of the season. Most tied with Miles Price, according to Jameson Hensley of ESPN, tied with Miles Price for most among wide receivers this season. Flowers is the only wide receiver with multiple lost fumbles on offensive plays this season. Price's fumbles came on special teams. Yeah, you know, Zay has these moments where I always think back to the fumbled into the end zone play against the Chiefs in the playoffs of his rookie season. He's a good player. He's objectively a good player. Like I said, sixth in the NFL in yards per route run. I think he's one of the better, most underrated zone beaters in the NFL, can certainly win on certain route concepts against man coverage. But to me personally, not quite a number one. And he is, I actually think if you go back and read my reception perception prospect profile of him, I talk about how he plays with a lot of fire and aggression and separates against man press coverage for a smaller player. He can win an open field. Like you want to design him stuff in the open field, and yet he's just too mistake prone. That was the word I wrote about him. And he is a really good player who does all those things I just talked about, and yet he is very mistake prone in what's ultimately big moments. So to me, I think Zay is a great player, a good number two, but God, just not quite a number one. And this team feels like it needs a number one. You know, you don't see much from Rashad Bateman, my guy, anymore, which is unfortunate, but he has not been involved this season. And he's just a role player anyways. Like I have affinity for Rashad Bateman's game, but he's a role player, you know, kind of just a perimeter guy that's going to pop up every now and again. And DeAndre Hopkins pops up for like a crazy catch every now and again. It just feels like there's a lot missing in this Ravens passing offense. Even when it's Snoop Huntley back there, something's a little missing there. Something's a little off in the run game too. This felt like a game that Derrick Henry, I know he had the one fumble early and he was hard on himself for that, which is a bummer, but there's also just something bizarre about the usage there. Derrick Henry, zero touches after putting the Ravens up 24-13 with 12 minutes and 50 seconds left. He finishes the game with 18 carries for 128 yards and two touchdowns. And, you know, Boone and I have gone back and forth about this year. Maybe there's a little bit less off, you know, from like peak Derrick Henry. But when I watch Derrick, I don't see anything that's really missing. Like, I think maybe the down-to-down consistency isn't there, but I don't know how much to separate that from him versus the offensive line and an offense that I just think I am a fan of Todd Monken, but I think it's just kind of been a little stale this year in some ways. The whole Ravens operation feels a little bit stale, if we're being quite honest. So I don't know how to like extrapolate some of that stuff or extract Derrick Henry from some of the rushing success rate numbers, which have been lower this year. It's been a little bit more of a boom bust run game, but man, tonight they were pushing that pile. Henry is getting to the second level. He's making those explosive plays, and it felt like they just kind of completely got away from him. You know, like Keaton Mitchell gets into the mix. Rashawn Ali's out there. And I know Derrick Henry's never going to be a passing down player this deep in his career. He never was, but still, I don't know. Maybe you guys disagree, but I felt it was weird that they didn't just lean on Derrick Henry throughout the course of this night, because the Ravens were up, right? They were ahead. They could have just grinded this thing out, and they just kind of chose not to. So to me, I know that when there were the fire Mike Tomlin chants, you know, and which obviously the Steelers have locked in, another winning season here. You know, that just what is dead will never die. That's the Pittsburgh Steelers. I get it. So there was the fire Mike Tomlin champs, and some people were like, should we not be thinking about, you know, John Harbaugh maybe in the same ballpark? I don't quite know how I feel about that, but there is a part of me that thinks things are a little stale in Baltimore. There's a little bit lack of creativity here this year, and there's just been some confusing things with this Ravens team this year. So I don't view this Ravens team as a playoff team. I haven't for quite some time. And it's just not one where we're getting anything good consistently. I think if you've rostered any of these players in fantasy, you've probably felt that too, where, you know, Isaiah Likely had a little moment and now that's like completely gone. Zay Flowers, awesome start to the season. Lamar gets hurt, okay, but then even when Lamar's back, it's whatever. Lamar obviously up and down this season. Derrick Henry up and down this season. It just there's nothing that you can really set your watch by with this Ravens team right now. And the entire Baltimore Ravens operation has been for a long time something we could set our watch by. So weird season for the Ravens this year. And I don't know if there will be big changes for Baltimore after this year, but it does look like a team that is going to miss the playoffs. And like I said, when I watch them, and I haven't felt this way for quite some time, when I watch them, I don't sit there and say, man, if you just get them in the playoffs, they could do some damage. No, I think if you get them in the playoffs, they're going to lose to a team that's better than them, even if they don't have the same name brand players. All right. That is a Sunday Night Football recap. We are going to take a quick break. When we come back, Chris Allen joins the show for everything you need to know from Week 16. We'll get into that right after this. What's going on, everybody? I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast, and it is a hell of a day to talk ball. Week 16, man, what a wild ride, including an ending to a game that happened. Of all the games in NFL history, that ending was one of them. Joining me to talk a little ball here in the fallout of Lions-Steelers, one of the weirdest game endings of all time, it's Chris Allen. Chris, what's going on, buddy?
I don't know, man. I'm trying to process what we just watched at the end of that Lions-Steelers game. I still don't understand it. But I guess to be fair, I don't really understand a lot of what we witnessed throughout the day, especially with the outcome of some of the Raiders-Texans game and a few other contests that we'll get to. But no, we'll try and break it down and see if we can make sense of enough of it for the folks that are still battling in their fantasy championships.
Yeah, to pull the curtain back a little bit here, Chris and I usually, and the producers usually hop on, you know, when we think there's like a couple minutes left in the final game, we're waiting here. We all watch the ending of the game together. We're all on different speeds too, because that's the streaming world that we live in. And we've been sitting here for quite some time. I'm sure if some of the folks who join us live, either on social media, YouTube, whatever, have been like, when are they going to start this dang show? Right. We've been waiting for the end of that game, and it took quite a minute. We are going to break down Lions and Steelers later on. That's not the first game we have here. We're going to get to all of our usual stuff. First segment, games we care about most, including our boom and bust player of the week. We got the second segment, the games we sort of care about, and the Sunday games that are the email games here, man. And we've got some email games coming up this week. But let's get it started with our boom and bust player of the week. Our boom player, it's Chris Olave at 31.8 fantasy points. Chris Olave caught a touchdown from Tyler Shuck. He also caught a touchdown from Taysom Hill on his lone throw of the day. As it stands right now, Chris Allen, Chris Olave is tied with Puka Nacua for second among wide receivers in targets. He ranks fifth in catches, sixth in yards, and is one of eight wide receivers with eight or more touchdowns. He has been a fantastic fantasy pick. He has been even better since Tyler Shuck took over from an efficiency perspective. Got to give Shuck a lot of credit there. But man, Chris Olave, excellent game today. It was a great matchup against the Jets defense at the perfect time, and he certainly showed up big.
Yeah, and I think coming into this matchup, we all thought that there was at least going to be a few more opportunities for Chris Olave. No Devon Vele in this game. Devin Neal, who had been taking away a few targets here and there over the past few weeks, was also going to be out. So seeing Olave not just lead the team in targets, but really shine and like really outproduce like some of the ways that we'd seen him in the past, and come down with what 10 receptions and whatnot. And one of the things that I was noticing after the game, they were during some of the press conferences shortly after, I mean, Olave talking about the fact that he was considering retiring at some point just because of the number of concussions that he had sustained over the previous years. So to see him playing with a rookie quarterback, really showing out here in this game on top of all of that, I mean, really just goes to show you like how well he's developed over the past 3, 4, 5 years. And then hopefully we continue to see that with him and probably Shuck as the guy that's going to be under center, at least in 2026.
Oh yeah. I think Shuck has done more than enough at this point to be the odds on favorite to start week one and be their guy next season. I think that's to me, at least, I think we're clearly there. Just a little more on Chris Olave here. Could not be happier for him. You mentioned number one, just all of the concussion concerns and some of the things that were haunting him over the last few years. To see him, number one, be able to come out and do that this year. But also, man, I mean, this is the first time, in my opinion, he has been for a full season in a well-designed offense. I thought some of those Pete Carmichael offenses early on in his career were like a complete joke, very archaic, were not suited to, I don't think suited to Derek Carr's game, certainly was not suited to modern football. So that was great for him. I mean, I did my ranking of the top 15 wide receivers ages 25 and under this offseason. And look, there's some takes I want back from that article, no question about it. But one piece of feedback that I realized after that was, it wasn't just that people thought that Chris Olave couldn't stay healthy. People thought Chris Olave like legitimately wasn't good because he didn't have these like big fantasy games. And I understand, like, yeah, he didn't have these monster takeover the slate weeks. And to see him actually be in this boom player here, I think is really cool because he's been a great fit in Kellen Moore's offense. He's obviously, look, knock on wood, of course, but he's been able to avoid any concussions this season. He even hasn't been perfect. I think there's like another step for him to take if he can secure some more contested catches, like more high degree of difficulty receptions along the boundary, in the end zone, stuff like that. Like, there's meat left on the bone here for Olave. So I'm just really happy for a guy that, like you said, thought about retiring, thought about walking away from football, and was definitely getting a ton of crap from fantasy players and people on the internet this offseason. Like, this is a really good football player having an awesome season here in his fourth year in an offense that really, really suits his skills. So huge shout out to Chris Olave.
100%. And to your point, one of the things that I think we talked about, it maybe midway through the season, starting to notice some of the uptick in his production, was that we were seeing him being used in a much different way than what, to kind of what you were saying earlier, how Pete Carmichael was deploying him on the field in years past, where his average depth of target was starting to tick down. You're starting to see him more moving around the formation, pre-snap motion. I mean, enough such that this is not the same Chris Olave from 2022 or earlier, where he was just more of those deep threats where when he did produce, it would be on some of those deeper targets on the vertical routes down the perimeter of the field. We are seeing him on more crossing patterns, things of that nature. So it is a little bit easier to see him have both a floor and the type of ceiling that we're seeing in this type of game, where if he is kind of more or less the focal point of the entire offense, not to say that he hasn't throughout the year, but really 16 targets without the wide receiver two for Vele, without really having any sort of, I would say, additional support from the running back standpoint, this is why you get to see Chris Olave really start to hit the ceiling in terms of what we know from a talent standpoint that he can get to, which we really didn't get to see that in years past.
He's certainly going to be a fun player to talk about in the offseason as we assess kind of his dynasty standing, where he's going to go in 2026 drafts. We'll talk more about the Saints much, much later on in this program, but we have to discuss our bust player of the week here on Sunday, and that was Josh Allen at just 6.9 points. Man, it hurts to see Josh Allen here, but unfortunately, he belongs. This is his worst fantasy game in years. It is his only game with fewer than 9 fantasy points in his career that he has also that the Buffalo Bills have also won. The last time Josh Allen started and finished a game was all the way back in 2000 and finished, you know, this low, was a 1.94 outing all the way back in his rookie year, September 30th of 2018 against the Green Bay Packers. The Bills scored 0 points and lost to the Green Bay Packers that year. So, man, we're talking about like rookie year type stat lines for Josh Allen. Just really unfortunate for one of the league's premier players to give you this sort of performance in week 16, your fantasy football semifinals.
Yeah, and we already knew coming into this game that, at least from a passing standpoint, things were going to be somewhat up and down for the Bills as a whole. Keon Coleman was a healthy scratch. Dalton Kincaid came into this somewhat banged up. I think he missed 2 practices earlier in the week. So if he wasn't going to be without really any reliable receivers, this was going to be tough for him from a passing standpoint. And then during the middle of this game, he comes up with a foot injury. There was I think one of the beat reporters recorded a video of him walking to the locker room at halftime, visibly limping. Yep. I know they said that he had the x-rays and he was cleared to return, but the second half, no rushing attempts for Josh Allen. So if we were already down on the pass catching core for Buffalo, and now he's going to be at least limited as a rusher, I mean, if this is the type of output that you're going to get, even if it was against a Cleveland run defense that had been, I mean, somewhat giving it up to opposing running games over the past few weeks. So hopefully this is just going to be for this game. He gets some treatment and he's back out there doing a Superman thing in week 17. But yeah, if folks were counting on him for week 16, I mean, their playoff hopes might be kind of shot at this point.
Yeah, we'll talk more about that Bills passing game later, and not a lot of fun things to say about it. But for now, let's get into the games we care about most here, starting with Panthers 24, Buccaneers 20. The Panthers have taken the lead in the NFC South with the home win over the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. A last blast play interception from Baker Mayfield sealed the deal. What do we think of this Panthers offense here? Bit of an interesting outing from them. 47% success rate on their running back runs, but just 6.7 explosive rushing rate here, Chris. The run game didn't give them too much in terms of those big plays. Instead, it was in the passing game. Bryce Young pushing the ball down the field, outside of structure and inside of structure. Tedero McMillan and Jalen Coker were the only two pass catchers to run a route on 80% of the dropbacks. 11.7 for McMillan air yards per target, 14 air yards per target for Jalen Coker. Those guys and Bryce Young showed up big on offense today.
Yeah, and earlier in this game, I believe it was Bryce Young, he gets stepped on by one of his linemen, seems to re-injure his ankle, because I know he was dealing with that earlier in the season. But after that, it was like similar to what we had seen over the past couple of weeks where, I mean, he is just absolute nails on third down. I mean, 9 attempts, 6 completions, 4 first downs, one of them being the touchdown to Dejavian Sanders, which was, I mean, just an absolute crazy throw from him and also an excellent catch from Sanders as well. But I would say that the formula kind of shifted, because I think you and I talked about it in the recap show, I believe a couple of weeks ago, where it was, yeah, they get a lot of the early down rushing production in order to set things up to be a little bit easier for Bryce Young. And then it's the explosives to Jalen Coker. And then it's kind of the intermediate passes to Tedero McMillan. But in this game, like you were just mentioning, I mean, yeah, Rico Dowdle leads the way from a snaps and also carries perspective, but not the production's there for neither him nor Hubbard. So it really is put on Bryce Young, and seeing him start to press the ball downfield a bit more, I think around 8 air yards per attempt, which we hadn't really seen from him. I mean, it was good that he was able to at least be aggressive, show that he had some trust and confidence in Tedero McMillan this time. And I guess the one note that I had, or the thing that really stuck out my mind, is why isn't this always here? I mean, we seem to have some questions almost every other week about, well, why isn't he getting the ball over to McMillan a bit more? Why is he having to rely on Jalen Coker for to make the explosives and really trying to open this game up? Whereas in this game, it's again, 10 targets, over a third of McMillan's routes are coming from the slot. It's just, why isn't this always there for them? So it's good to see, but at the same time, if we could see or get a little more consistency in terms of where McMillan and Bryce Young are at from a rapport standpoint, I really think that this could continue to be something that can develop more and more over the next, at least next couple of weeks, to maintain control of the NFC South, but of course going into 26 and beyond.
I think I said Panthers 23 to 20 here. Panthers win over the Bucks. But yeah, no, I think to your point about this, the lack of consistency with this team, and look, this is one of the least consistent outfits in the entire NFL. It's always an up and down experience. I think we do have to remember this is a really young group. On offense, Bryce Young in the skill position rooms, other than obviously some of the running backs have been around there for a minute, but In the passing game, Bryce Young's kind of the veteran, and he's only been in the league for 3 seasons and has not been a starter for all 3 of those seasons. Obviously, he was benched last year. McMillan is a rookie. There's been some talk about from some of the Panthers beat writers and stuff, like, was McMillan hitting a rookie wall? I think they obviously don't say that for no reason. There's been some up and down moments for McMillan this year, but when he's on, he looks really, really good. I do think Jalen Coker emerging as a true number 2 receiver for them now that he's healthy has been huge. You mentioned McMillan taking reps in the slot. Jalen Coker now for 3 weeks straight has made a big play as the X receiver against man coverage on a go route. Like, him adding that to the offense, another guy that can do that beyond just McMillan, that's huge. And like, I don't think this team's going to be consistent this year. I really don't think either one of these teams, whoever wins the NFC South, because that's going to be the question in week 18, which one of these teams ends up winning the NFC South. I don't think they're about to make a run through this NFC field that we're talking about here. But for Carolina, you can kind of say, hey, we win this division, we go in and we have a respectable playoff game. You know, even Dave Canales is young in his coaching career, young in his play calling career. He's only been doing this now for 3 seasons, 1 with Tampa Bay, 2 with Carolina as a play caller. So it's a lot of guys that I think are trying to figure it out, but it looks like it's trending in the right direction. This could be an ecosystem that we want to invest in 2026 and beyond, as long as we finish strong here.
Oh, 100%, because I could already see Tedero McMillan being one of the, let's say, early round wide receivers that a lot of folks are going to want to target in drafts. And then Coker will probably be just everybody's favorite sleeper that's going to get the tag of, you'll see this post almost throughout the entire offseason of, nobody's talking about Jalen Coker enough, and then everybody's going to really be talking about him at the same time. I can already see that's the tag that he's going to get for the 2026 offseason for sure.
On the Buccaneers side of things here, It's tough right now from not just a real life perspective. I think from a fantasy perspective, I think there's a lot of difficult situations to talk about. Like, where do you want to start this one, Chris? Because I'm curious where you are with this Bucks team, the rotation in the passing game, the bizarre usage for Bucky Irving, Todd Bowles potentially on the ropes. A lot of options here. Which thread do you want to pull on first?
I guess I'll start with the passing game portion of this, because I don't understand for the life of me what it is about Baker Mayfield and this passing offense. Because I think we talked about it 2 or 3 weeks ago, where it was outside of the explosives, like even in the earlier parts of the season, if it wasn't the explosives to Egbuka or even Mike Evans when he was still healthy, the down-to-down passing efficiency for this offense just wasn't there. Baker Mayfield was essentially living off of some of those big plays and also from the scrambles as well to really elevate himself from an EPA per play standpoint. But now here in this game, 145 passing yards. I mean, he was only pressured on around like 25-26% of his dropbacks. And still, it's just the passing completion isn't there. Some of the throws on third downs aren't there. I mean, the game-sealing interception, it's just all of those things that continue to pile up. And this isn't a case where it's the offensive line injuries that are really holding him back. This isn't a case where he's having to deal with a shorthanded pass-catching group. Everybody's there. Everybody's healthy, or at least relatively enough such that we shouldn't have the same concerns as we had earlier in the season. So I don't know if this is going to be a case where whether it's not just from Baker Mayfield himself, but also from Bucky Irving and his usage. And we'll talk about that here in a second. But I do wonder if it's once we get into February or like early spring or somewhere that the reports start to come out of, well, Baker Mayfield, he was dealing with XYZ in terms of injuries, Bucky Irving dealing with blah, 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 blah. And I think that's where we're at right now, just because outside of that, this is not the same quarterback that we saw last year. And I get it. It was Liam Cohen running this offense and helping out with some of the efficiency, play calling, and all of that. But still, it's just there's something else that's kind of plaguing this entire team at this point that's kind of giving us the production we're seeing as of right now.
Yeah, we'll have a lot of time over the next few weeks to talk about kind of the big picture stuff. Like, is Todd Bowles going to keep this job? We'll see how the season ends and, you know, how much of the play calling is at fault for this. But I totally agree with you that at some point we're going to get a report at the end of the year. Well, Baker Mayfield was never really healthy. And I think that's probably a big part of this, too. I think it can also just be that he's a streaky player. You know, he's a guy prone to up and downs. And I think we're seeing a lot of downs here lately. And, you know, the wide receiver room, it's like everybody's back, but it almost feels like they don't quite know what they want to do with everybody back. You know, Jalen McMillan runs more routes than Emeka Ibuka today. And McMillan is a guy that is not going to lead to like smooth. I like McMillan as a player. I like him as like a speed lid lifting number three, but he's not going to be a guy that's going to help this offense find a lot of consistency. And today when Baker Mayfield, according to Next Gen Stats, got the ball out of his hands in under 2.5 seconds, he was 11 of 13 for 66 yards and a touchdown. Anytime he held it longer than that, 7 of 13, and the interception that lost the game. It just feels like if the play goes a long time, not a lot of good stuff is happening other than Baker taking off and scrambling at times. So it just feels like a very herky-jerky passing game. And in the run game, we could talk about Bucky Irving here for a second. Man, I continue to be really concerned that this is essentially a three-man backfield here. You know, Bucky is out there and he looks good on his touches, 71 yards from scrimmage today, but he's playing all the snaps and like 61%, that's great. But Rashad White is in the mix as a pass catcher. He runs 11 routes to 15 for Bucky Irving. Irving, 0 targets on the day, 2 for Rashad White. And then Bucky does not get a single touch inside the 10-yard line. When they get down close, they're going to Sean Tucker. It's just, I have Bucky Irving on a fantasy team, and I don't know what to do. Like, I'm going to play him, but you're just kind of throwing your hands up and hoping he makes a big play to get into the end zone.
And even before this week, the hope was, all right, I could understand Irving isn't going to get there as the goal line guy. Maybe it's the shoulder thing still kind of lingering from early in the season. They want to make sure that he's still available for them if they start playing more meaningful football in January. So we'll let Sean Tucker take the goal line stuff. Okay, that's fine. I can get behind that. But now we're not even getting pass game usage. I know that Rashad White was typically their 2-minute obvious passing down type of running back. But still, I mean, Irving was still getting maybe 2-3 targets. Targets somewhere from that standpoint, enough so that at least the floor for touches was there from Irving. But now we're not even getting that. So I would definitely have some concerns if you are still kind of lingering or like hanging on in your playoff matchups. I know that still at least seeing Irving continue to get the bulk of the carries is great. But again, if they're those empty calorie touches because he's not getting the passing game work and he's also not getting the work once they get inside the five or inside the 10, it just becomes even more volatile from Irving's standpoint for him to really produce from a fantasy standpoint.
Yeah, this again, it's just a layers upon layers of frustration for this Bucks team. I think in real life and definitely in fantasy football right now, really it's gone for one of those offense that I was hoping would be a circle of trust unit, one of the best in the NFL once everybody got healthy, to it's almost made it even more frustrating now that everybody's healthy and there's still so many ups and downs. Let's get to another big divisional game here. This one happened on Saturday night. What a freaking game between the Chicago Bears and the Green Bay Packers. Bears 22, Packers 16. Don't you dare, Matt Harmon, don't you dare take away this win from the Chicago Bears, because what an electric night this was. Listen, I love my job. I love coming on this podcast and doing this recap with you. But when I get a night game where I can just, you know, settle in and I don't have to think about having takes afterwards, God, that's some good football to watch, baby. So that was a ton of fun on Saturday night. Here's just some of the crazy things that happened at the end of this game for the Chicago Bears. Their win probability, according to Next Gen Stats, was as low as 0.5% before recovering an onside kick coming out of the 2-minute warning in their comeback overtime win against the Green Bay Packers. That's just how bleak it was at some point. In the final 2 minutes in overtime in Chicago, this is what happened. The Bears kicked a field goal to make it 16-9. The Bears recovered an onside kick. The Bears throw a fourth down touchdown. The Bears convert an extra point. The Bears sacked Malik Willis to force overtime. The Packers get the ball to start overtime. The Packers fumble a snap, but the Bears recover. Caleb Williams throws a beautiful pass. I saw PFF, you know, I don't know all the technicalities of it. It was like one of the best passes they've ever graded or something like that. 46-yard touchdown to DJ Moore. The second walk-off touchdown of DJ Moore's NFL career. The whole time I'm thinking they're like, where is DJ? Like, come on, man, make a play. He made the play of all plays, had an electric interview after the game. This was a wild finish for the Chicago Bears, Chris. What did you see in this one?
I mean, the best part about, I would say, outside of the catch from DJ Moore, it was, if you saw it from the end zone or from the actually watching it from DJ Moore's angle, if you see his face during the catch, right after Caleb Williams lets that ball go, his hands immediately go back into the hand warmers. Like, he knew that was it. He was like, that's it. That's a touchdown. It was sick watching watching it from that side of things. But still, in that game, it was more of the entire offense essentially coming together, because it's outside of those touchdowns, again, which were great. It was more predicated on that running game for the Chicago Bears. And I know a lot of folks have been talking about it over these last 5, 6, 7 weeks or so, but Ben Johnson really does have both Kyle Manungai and DeAndre Swift, who came into this game with a groin injury. I mean, the play designs from them from a running standpoint, whether it's DeAndre Swift running to the outside, Kyle Manungai straight up the middle, I mean, you're getting explosives or at least enough efficient carries from both of them that it's able to keep Caleb Williams in enough manageable situations so that the offense continues to work. And both Manungai and Swift, both over 50% rushing success rate in this game. And outside of, what was it? They got a little cute once they got into the red zone early parts of the game. They wound up fumbling, and then that's why they didn't wind up getting a touchdown early on. But still, it's that run game. Now, if they wind up getting, let's say, they assume Roman Dunze is going to come back at some point, they get Luther Burden back as well. I mean, this is a legit offense, especially if they get this passing game back on track.
Yeah, with the Lions loss today, they have a 99% chance to make the playoffs to the Chicago Bears. According to the Athletics playoff predictor, they have a 92% chance to win the division. I mean, they clinched with that Lions loss. My bad. Yeah, no, it's an awesome season for the Bears here. And this was a crazy one, because you mentioned no Roman Dunze, no Luther Burden. I said this during the game. It felt like a team that was missing two of its top five guys, two of its like top guys in the passing game. There wasn't a lot of consistency there, you know, and there's some Caleb stuff to it as well, but for Moore and Williams to show up in the biggest moments like that and hit those big plays, that was pretty awesome to see and gives you some hope and faith as this team continues to go throughout the rest of the season. Love your notes about the backfield as well. Let's flip this over to the Packers side here, because obviously Jordan Love being ruled out in this game stinks. And yet Malik Willis came in here and played some good football. Malik Willis, it was so funny to watch the broadcast, you know, Brady and KB up there talking about how hard the wind was blowing. They're showing like paper blowing around on the field, cups blowing around on the field. And then the next play, Malik Willis comes out and just unfurls a beautiful touchdown outside the numbers, a 33-yard touchdown to Romeo Doubs. Malik Willis played really well in this game, 4 of 5 on pass attempts over 10 air yards for 100 yards, including that touchdown to Doubs, 28 rushing yards on 4 scrambles as well.
Yeah, and to the start of that game, honestly, the Packers passing game, it looked legit. From an efficiency standpoint, and it was good to see Christian Watson getting involved like fairly early, especially after his injury situation from week 15. But of course, Romeo Doubs coming in with just catch after catch after catch. I believe he had almost 5 catches just by the end of the first half, with some mix in for obviously from Christian Watson, even Luke Musgrave as well, and Jaden Reed kind of pitching in here and there. But my thought was, after Jordan Love goes down, Malik Willis, it'd be more of a run first type of game plan for them. That's what we'd seen in years past when Jordan Love has had to sit down or be out for a game or two. But no, he was still willing to air it out while also using his legs to generate first downs, scrambling for a few first downs here and there. And like to your point, I mean, just chucking it up for Romeo Doubs to come down with it. But I think the only concern here, not just Jordan Love's injury status and him going through the concussion protocol, but also it looked like, and this might have been more of a pride thing than anything else, but when Romeo Doubs missed that reception or trying to pick up the ball on that onside kick, I mean, he was out for the remainder of that game, I believe, with a wrist injury. Yeah. So that might be something that we have to at least watch out for if folks are looking to at least go back to the Packers passing game in week 17.
Just this unit's so banged up at different times. Like, nobody's been healthy altogether at any point. Obviously, Kraft is not coming back this year. Josh Jacobs is banged up entering this game, and he obviously gave a fantasy football dud here in week 16. They were using Emmanuel Wilson late in this game. It's just this offense is so banged up, and I don't know what to make of them. I mean, they're probably going to go to the playoffs. I think they have like a 94% chance to go to the playoffs. Maybe they've clinched. I don't know. The scenarios are all everywhere in my mind. But regardless, I think this is a playoff team. I just wonder what the ceiling of this operation is. I will just say Malik Willis also, by the way, has a shoulder injury coming out of this. That's one. Right, Matt LaFleur talked about that. So there's a lot of questions for the Packers to answer here. It's just unfortunate. I just think Malik Willis can actually play a little bit. I'm not saying he's going to be something crazy or anything, but he's definitely shown some comfort in this system. He played well in this game. He's a free agent in the offseason. I'm just telling you guys, there are teams out there that are going to have to get creative at the quarterback position, whether they're looking for a starter or they're one of these teams that are going to be looking for real deal competition to push a young guy that they're kind of on the fence about. Malik Willis is going to be an interesting option for some of these teams here. I had somebody suggest the Miami Dolphins. That would be pretty fun with the way that run game has come together. Add Malik Willis into the mix. I'd be interested in that.
I'd be interested in that too. And we almost have to wonder, what is their offensive identity going to be, assuming that they're at least they not necessarily completely move on from Tua, because I know from a contract standpoint, he's likely still going to be with the team in 2026. But we do have to wonder if, I'm assuming Tyreek Hill is not going to be a part of that equation. So could they try, and Mike McDaniel try and get back into his bag of tricks and see if there's another way they can redesign this offense? And if they bring in a guy like Malik Willis, and maybe they stick with Quinn Ewers and bring in some other free agents in order to try and revamp that entire offense, yeah, that could be a way that they could do that. So I could definitely see the Dolphins being at least a good candidate for a team that's looking for not just good, better production from a quarterback standpoint, but also just a new offensive identity on top of that.
Next game up here, Jaguars 34, Broncos 20. I will say the Jaguars offense started a pretty up and down here, but at the end of the day, Trevor Lawrence backs up his big game from last week. three touchdowns through the air, another touchdown on the ground. Impressive outing from Trevor Lawrence. And the offense essentially flowed through Parker Washington and Jacoby Myers. Several big-time catches down the football field for Parker Washington in this one.
Yeah, a number of them where he gets hit on some of those intermediate outbreakers. The Broncos defenders, they're over pursuing. The angles are bad. And then afterwards, he's just able to kind of flip out and then grow down the sideline for a large gains after the fact. So, I mean, yeah, excellent to see that from Trevor Lawrence. And I think I saw this like posted on social media a couple of times, Ed, but just a huge shout out to, I would say, just Trevor Lawrence. And again, that Liam Kahn connection where we saw something similar from Baker Mayfield last year, where it wasn't just the passing efficiency going up when he had Chris Godwin, Mike Evans, and all the rest of them trying working in sync. But it was also the rushing that we saw out of Baker Mayfield last year, which wasn't necessarily a part of his game in prior years. And now we're seeing that with Trevor Lawrence as well. And not to say that Lawrence never had that. We'd seen that since he pretty much came into the league and it was Urban Meyer coaching the team. But now seeing him be able to kind of hone that in and use that not just for scrambling ability, but also we saw him, I mean, pull the ball away and actually use that on a zone read a couple of times as well. And of course, the rushing touchdowns in back-to-back games. I mean, this is an offense now that can really start to hit its stride. And if now we're doing this in 2 weeks, not just against the Jets, but against a legitimate defense in the Broncos, a lot of folks are now saying like we have to take the Jags seriously. And honestly, with the way they were playing last week, I thought this was going to be the case. I mean, almost definitely, even if they had to play against a tough defense in Denver.
I love the way they came in this game, man. They were just, they had like an attitude to them. We're showing the quote on the screen here from Liam Cohen saying like, for a smaller market team like us to come in here and get this win. You know, that you're talking about that when Sean Payton earlier in the week called the Jaguars a quote, smaller market team. Liam Cohen's got an edge to him. And I think that Trevor Lawrence is playing like he's got an edge to him here. You mentioned just the rushing ability is so huge for Trevor Lawrence. And I think it just breeds confidence in him. And he's not a guy who always seems like he plays with a lot of confidence, you know, and he was pressured on 49% of his dropbacks in this game. And he just kept rolling, kept firing the football down the field. Again, Parker Washington for a team that gives up a lot of air yards to the slot. We talked about that this week. Parker Washington ends up being the guy that gets those air yards from the slot, just firing that football downfield, making the rush attempts. I mean, Andy and I, by the way, shout out to Barons, man, for that Bears win. I got a very funny text from him this morning. So definitely one of these, definitely these times I miss podcasting with Barons when it's a Bears win, like no question. But, you know, we always just talk about like, why is Trevor Lawrence not taking advantage of those athletic gifts? And I think sometimes it's got to come from a coach who really believes in you. And look, I don't know anything, but you can just kind of read between the lines. And I just don't know that Doug Peterson and Trevor Lawrence ever vibed. It never seemed like Doug was all that juiced about Trevor Lawrence, and I don't think Trevor Lawrence is all that juiced about playing for Doug Peterson. And this relationship has not gotten off on the right foot right away, but right now this looks like a play caller and a coach that are on the same page and a team that is very, very good and continues to elevate a lot of different guys on offense.
Well, I can't really see Doug Peterson going after Robert Saleh and telling him to keep his name out of his mouth. But I mean, we definitely saw Liam Cohen do that earlier in the season. So if you're looking for a coach that's going to get you fired up and give you, have you, you know, with that level of motivation to play for you, I definitely would see Liam Cohen having that type of at least attitude about just not just the play calling and efficiency and making sure that everything is right from a design standpoint, but at the same time, it's just, can you get your players to believe and get behind you from that standpoint? And I definitely think it's taken a while, and especially with the injuries to Travis Hunter earlier in the season, Brian Thomas Jr., it's seeing him get back and make a couple of contributions here and there. I mean, now with everybody healthy, minus Travis Hunter, of course. I mean, we even saw Brenton Strange, I mean, catching a number of passes either down the sideline or across the middle. And so now it's just everything's starting to click. Everything is starting to come into place. And I think it's now easier for a lot of those players to really see Liam Cohen's vision for this entire offense. And everybody's starting to buy in. Piece by piece, everybody's starting to buy in.
Yeah, and just real quick note on Brian Thomas Jr., you know, he's obviously not involved in this game at all. He's second on the team in routes behind Jacoby Myers, who got that big contract extension. Shout out to Jacoby Myers, has just really changed the complexion of this offense. To me, at least watching the game, it sure felt like Brian Thomas was just kind of getting sacrificed at times here, and that's kind of the role he's playing for this team right now. He's a little bit of that sacrificial X receiver, not exclusively running at the X receiver position, but mostly running there, and you know, that's going to make him a very hit or miss player almost regardless of how he's playing in isolation or whatever. So it just, that's what, that's going to happen here against a really good secondary like the Denver Broncos. But good game from Parker Washington, who's a like a legit player on this team, no question about that. Broncos side of it here, I think Bo Nix kind of had the inverse game of Trevor, where I thought Bo Nix started off really hot, was playing pretty well against a tough defense, and by the end of it, kind of slowed to a halt at the end of the game, and really unfortunate ending to this contest as well. Pretty much wrapped up with a brutal hit and tight coverage for rookie Pat Bryan, who had to be carted off the field. You know, Bo Nix knew it was a bad one right after, you know, Pat Bryan took that hit. So after that, the scoreboard already was what it was, but at that point, the game was just over. So I thought a good start for Bo Nix in the passing game, did not finish well, though.
Yeah, and a couple of play calling, I don't know, just I was confused a bit, like after they got into the red zone a couple of times and it was just more passing attempts, not trying to use RJ Harvey, even though they had seen him rip off a number of explosives earlier in the game. So I had a couple of questions there. But then, yeah, kind of to your point, not really seeing, I would say there's a couple of misfires here and there. He's got the zone read, which he wound up trying to tug away and trying to keep the ball a little bit, that winds up dropping to the ground, causing a fumble, the bad interception later on in the game as well. So just a couple of things here and there that put them in those, I would say, long down and distance, or even just like negative passing scripts, to the point where, yeah, the wheels started to fall off that entire offense. But earlier in the game, it was good to see him still being able to be aggressive, trying to hit all of his pass catchers from Cortland Sutton all the way down to Evan Ingram, seeing him continue to get involved. So I would say on the whole, I mean, a better game, or at least a good enough game, especially coming on the heels of, I'd say, one of his best performances against the Packers. So the hope would be that, yeah, they already are, I would say, on their way to the playoffs. But if he continues to stack up these types of games, and now he can have more of a complete game moving forward, I think we'll see the better version of Bo Nix in week 17 and beyond.
RJ Harvey, another big game here from a fantasy football standpoint, 50 yards and a touchdown on the ground, 71 yards through the air on 5 targets. This was a tough matchup for him from a run defense perspective, and he still proved to be a guy that needs to be in your lineup. So definitely, if you got him, continue to roll with him into your fantasy football championships. Let's get to the last game here of this section. We talked about it at the very, very top. Steelers 29, Lions 24. On the Steelers side of it, man, I mean, it was a very Steelers-esque game at times. You know, you've got these veteran wide receivers kind of roaming around, but you've got Jaylen Warren ripping off some explosive runs, which we don't normally see. A lot of kind of dink and dunk in the passing game, but Kenneth Gainwell makes one of the plays of the season. You know, I've been talking about how Aaron Rodgers is throwing to Kenneth Gainwell at a rate that's akin to like some of the alpha wide receivers in the league. Well, that was kind of like an alpha wide receiver catch from Kenneth Gainwell on this one. 78 yards and a touchdown for Gainwell on 7 targets, including the 45-yard crazy catch and run into the end zone.
And I had to watch it probably 2 or 3 times just to make sure that I saw what I was seeing, because I thought the ball had bounced off the ground and he caught it, but no, it just came off of his wrist and then it was just still there. Nobody touched him and he just goes into the end. It's just one of those one in a million type of plays. But I would say, even kind of to your point, the opportunity was going to be there for Gainwell anyway. He was already rocking around a 17-18% target rate coming into this game. I mean, Aaron Rodgers was targeting him and talking about him like he was essentially the team's wide receiver two, right behind DK Metcalf. And you saw that in this game where, yeah, Metcalf is essentially the team's wide receiver one, also the team's, I would say, fighter number one, since he gets into an altercation with a yeah. fan in the game on top of that, which was kind of wild too. He's throwing punches and catching passes. I mean, DK Metcalf is just an all-in-one receiver. But for Gainwell specifically, if you do have him on your roster, he essentially has that floor from a receiving standpoint because he gets all of those touches that he should at least be in the RB2 conversation week in and week out. And from Jaylen Warren's standpoint, I think the biggest thing for him was the fact that he wasn't ripping off some of those explosive runs, and it really did require him and the entire offense to really get into those down and distance situations so he could break off some of those runs like we saw today. So good on him for reestablishing that role for him in the running back or in the rushing game. But just some general concerns about, well, if he doesn't get those, where else is the production going to come from? I think that's my only takeaway from this game for Jaylen Warren.
Yeah, you need those explosive runs. There just hasn't been very many of them, to your point, this year. Circling back to the Metcalf thing, if you guys haven't seen it, definitely, you know, look it up, social media, whatever, you can find it. He essentially was getting into it with the fan, and looks like he either pushed or threw a punch at the fan, and you can't be disciplined for that during the game if the officials don't see it, and they did not see it. That was apparently the rule that was explained on the broadcast. Well, the NFL has definitely seen it, and I'm going to go ahead and say DK Metcalf's not playing in week 17. Fine, for sure, brother. I there's going to be some money loss, and I think he could end up getting suspended for that one too. He had a touchdown called back in this one. It was a very frustrating game for DK Metcalf. I had him in fantasy, and I don't think you should be prepared for him to be in your lineup in week 17. I don't know, but my guess is you can't, you know, get into an altercation with a fan like that and expect to be on the field in the next game. So, man, wasn't the whole logic for getting rid of George Pickens like, yeah, we can't have our wide receiver one be this kind of hothead or whatever, and then you've got the guy that you traded for and paid producing much less, and like throwing punches at the fans. It's a tough look. Yeah. It's a tough look, that's for sure.
It is a tough look, especially coming on off of a game where he was dominant against the Dolphins. I mean, literally stiff arming a guy backwards so that he can run forwards and get into the end zone last week. And this was also in a game where we talked about it earlier this morning. The amount of like man coverage that the Lions were still running was going to be essentially a way for DK Metcalf to have an even bigger week than we saw last week. And of course, he gets the opportunity to do so, but he can't really convert on a number of those targets from Aaron Rodgers. So yeah, tough day at the office for DK Metcalf, and probably even a tougher day after the NFL puts down a definitely hefty fines coming his way, but we'll see if a suspension also comes with it.
Tough day for the Detroit Lions as well, man. This got very close. I mean, truly, they could have won the game on the final few plays, which, as we said at the top, I don't even know how to, you know, I tried to recap what happened in the last 2 minutes in overtime in the Chicago Bears, and thankfully that was like just a sequence of things that happened. I don't know how to describe what happened at the end of this Lions game, but besides the fact that if they had scored a touchdown there at the end, they win this game and we're having a very different conversation. Man, I still feel like this Lions team is completely unrecognizable here. You know, they can't run the ball. Jahmyr Gibbs, 7 carries for 2 rushing yards. David Montgomery, 4 for 14. Jared Goff throws 54 passes in this game. And this is one of the first times in the Dan Campbell era I felt like another team pushed them around on both sides of the ball. Like, just wasn't a very... they looked unrecognizable is kind of what I'm getting at here. So, I mean, the Lions are probably not going to the playoffs at this point. It's just pretty disturbing game here from the Detroit Lions.
Yeah, and I know when we were talking earlier today, I was the one caping up for Jahmyr Gibbs and saying that this is going to be the week that he gets back into our good graces. Even with the offensive line concerns, this should be a game that the Steelers, they were missing a couple of defenders. I mean, we'd seen a number of opposing running backs still continue to get over on them from a rushing standpoint. But yeah, I think the one thing that I saw before this game that gave me enough pause was that their starting center was going to be out in this game. So after that happened, and we could at least anticipate a little bit of shuffling along the Lions offensive line, and you see how poorly that they were able to set up a lot of their run blocking in this game. I mean, neither of him, Jahmyr Gibbs or David Montgomery, were able to get there from a rushing standpoint. But like I was saying earlier today, we'll take those 13 targets or whatever for Jahmyr Gibbs, but if the floor for his production isn't going to be there from a rushing standpoint because they can't open up some of those same lanes that we saw even earlier in the season or last year, I mean, we are going to be reliant on a lot of those boom plays from him, but they just weren't there for him in this game.
At least we got another cool Isaac Tesla catch. Like, that's the best I can say about it, about this Lions game here. So yeah. At one point when he caught that touchdown, he had 10 catches in his rookie season, 5 for touchdown. And I feel like 4 of those 5 were the coolest catch that you've probably ever seen. So they've got something there in Tesla. So we'll see what happens with this Lions team. Again, they're not going to go to the playoffs this year. Just not a great season for them. All right. That does it for the games that we care most about. And we'll be back with more right after this quick break. Now let's get into the games that we sort of care about here, starting with Chargers 34, Cowboys 17. Fantastic Justin Herbert game here. 300 passing yards, 2 touchdowns on 29 attempts. He also ran the ball 8 times for 42 yards and another touchdown. And according to Next Gen Stats, Justin Herbert generated plus 23.9 EPA across his 33 dropbacks against the Cowboys. Second most by any quarterback in a game this season, and the second most of his NFL career. So, man, just an incredible game by Justin Herbert, and obviously a cakewalk matchup against the Cowboys secondary.
Justin Herbert is John Wick, man. It doesn't matter how many players keep falling down or they keep getting injured for him. They lost another lineman in this game. It did not matter for him. I mean, that man was rifling passes all over the field. I think he was around like 9.5 air yards per attempt, pressured on over 40% of his dropbacks. I believe at one point there were some beat writers actually asking if Trey Harris, he wound up having to have the trainers look at him along the sideline for a hand injury. And some folks were asking the question if Justin Herbert was the fact that he was, bazooka cannoning all of his passes over to his receivers, if that was the reason that Trey Harris's hand was hurt at some point, because we saw Quentin Johnston getting in there with 5 targets with an absolute nasty one-handed grab for a touchdown along the left sideline earlier in that game. But just, it doesn't matter for Justin Herbert. He is going to will this team into the playoffs. Any of the curses, or if the Chargers stadium was built on a Native American burial ground, doesn't matter to Justin Herbert. He is going to make it happen for this Chargers team by hook or by crook. And so it's awesome watching him play. And also, honestly, it forces the other teams to kind of speed up. And I know we'll get to Dak Prescott, but both of those quarterbacks were just throwing haymakers, I mean, for each time that they had the ball. So it was so much fun to watch that particular game.
Oh, no doubt. And yeah, everybody getting involved for the Chargers was so nice to see, because it feels like it's been a minute since we've actually been able to get all the pass catchers elevated or activated here. I know Aronde Gadsden only 1 catch for 7 yards, but in the wide receiver room, Ladd McConkey catches a touchdown. Quentin Johnson goes over 100 yards. He made rookie Siobhan Revelle's life very miserable at times. He caught some deep passes in this one. Keenan Allen moving the chains on third down. You mentioned Trey Harris. A guy they're really excited about, man. Greg Roman was talking about it this week, said this is not a Burger King offense, which I can interpret several different ways. Like, either he's saying you can't just have it your way, you can't do whatever you want, you got to get into the flow here, or he's kind of making like a Mickey Mouse offense type of joke. But essentially, he was saying this about Trey Harris. He's learned all 3 receiver positions and is just like straight up taking playing time away from Keenan Allen. He's going to be a really interesting guy to talk about. He made plays, 5 targets, 4 catches, 54 yards for Trey Harris in this one. Keandre Lambert-Smith obviously had another catch here. He had the touchdown last week. It's just good to see the Chargers offense, because Justin Herbert, as you said, will drag them, no matter what, will drag them to production here against a very bad defense. So good to see a lot of guys get activated here. Other injury note to update here, Kamani Vidal left with an injury, so Amarian Hampton essentially had the backfield mostly to himself, with Hassan Haskins kind of sprinkling in late. So if Vidal misses any time next week, we'll see what the split looks like between Amarian Hampton and Hassan Haskins. Let's go to the Cowboys side here. You mentioned Dak Prescott also throwing a lot of haymakers. He threw a lot of them to George Pickens. And when I saw Pickens in this game, I saw him in a lot of man coverage reps. You know, maybe it's zone coverage that turns into a match situation. But my whole point about Pickens in this game was I thought the Chargers could kind of zone him out of it as that X receiver. And it sure felt like they just decided to man up on this group, which interesting choice. I don't know what the thought process was there. And I obviously Jesse Minter's a really good coach, so I'm sure he has a good reason for it. But there wasn't any like, oh, we're moving George Pickens around more. I know they said that before the game. We're going to try to move him around. He played outside on 94% of his snaps. He was in the slot on 6%. It was just he had the man coverage matchups. Watching this here, you see the passing chart for Dak Prescott, just like on the left side there along the boundary. That was George Pickens. That was where the George. Yes. Yeah, those are the Pickens targets. So I like nothing about the usage changed. The Chargers just played a lot more man coverage, or again, maybe it was zone and then match situations, but those are where Pickens thrives, and he was able to thrive here for a big game, 130 yards on 9 targets.
Yeah, because Dak Prescott, he played well against their zone coverage that they were trying to lay out earlier in the game. 27 attempts, 19 receptions, 209 yards and 2 touchdowns against zone coverage. So I do wonder if the fact that he was dicing up the Chargers defense earlier in the game, Ryan Flannoy, he winds up getting into the end zone, suffers, I think it was a knee injury for him, if I'm remembering correctly, and he winds up missing the rest of this game. Right. So I do wonder if that's what forced some of the defensive changeups from Jesse Minter like toward throughout that game. But yeah, I think you had mentioned it earlier today on FF Live. It's just the way that Pickens plays and how he gets deployed on the field, typically having to play that ISO X receiver spot, it does lend itself to a lot of just general volatility from a production standpoint. But if you do wind up in one of these matchups where he gets hit with a couple of quick hitters for some long games, I think he had a little over 40 yards in this game, a couple of targets when Dak Prescott actually got the ball out in less than 2.5, 2.6 seconds, or he catches an explosive pass like down the sideline, or if he gets, I mean, it's just those things, it's almost like trying to hit a 2 or 3 leg parlay. But when you do and those things hit, this is why they needed to have a guy like George Pickens on the roster. And this is why folks drafted a guy like George Pickens for these types of performances. So while it hasn't been as consistent, I mean, it's been what, almost a solid month of him being at least underperforming from a fantasy standpoint. But when it does hit, I mean, man, you get these types of performances that especially folks really need at this point in the season.
Good news, if you have any of these Cowboys players, they play the Commanders in week 17 in Washington. So we should get another fire fest from George Pickens and these guys next week. Next game up here, Bengals 45, Dolphins 21. Chris, your Bengals on offense basically just got whatever they wanted in this game.
This is different. I don't think when was the last time we were here on a Sunday and I'm able to talk positively about the Bengals? It's been a while, because even after when they won on Thanksgiving against the Ravens, we had to wait a couple of days for me to talk about it. So I'm relishing in this just for a second. I mean, just to be able to see my team and just
go for it.
Joe Burrow happy. We don't have to worry about an existential crisis for Joe Burrow. We don't have any of those discussions, at least. Well, we'll wait until next week. But still, at least for now, everybody's happy. Everybody's smiling and all of that. Complimentary football. I mean, multiple turnovers from the Bengals defense. It was a fumble by Greg Dulcich. That turns into the Chase Brown reception TD. I mean, an interception when Josh Newton in coverage, because DJ Turner, who came into this game with an illness, he was out of the rotation at that point. Josh Newton coughs up an interception right there. That turns into Chase Brown's second touchdown. And then they stop the Dolphins when Quinn Ewers tries to go for a sneak on 4th-and-1, and then that turns into the Mike Gesicki touchdown, if I'm remembering correctly, like later on. So it's just that I don't remember seeing this type of play from the Bengals. And of course it comes at this point in the season where it doesn't matter all too much, but still hoping for that type of development from a defensive standpoint, and also seeing the offense continue to click. Joe Burrow, Ja'Marr Chase, and of course T getting into the end zone which was just a hilarious toe tapping catch along the right sideline from T. I mean, just all good to see like this entire offense clicking. And of course, like I mentioned earlier, the defensive stops and the defensive stands from the Bengals defense as well, even if it was against Quinn Ewers.
Yeah, I mean, you say it's against Quinn Ewers. To me, I don't know if you felt any differently. Watching that Dolphins offense, that could have been Tua. I mean, he threw a couple picks. Tua's thrown a boatload of picks all season long. He was using play action on 41.9% of his dropbacks was Quinn Ewers. 11 of 12 for 177 yards on play action. On non-play action dropbacks, 9 of 18 for 83 yards in both of his picks. That's kind of the Tua story. Not really this year, but previously, when things are in the flow, when things are going, it looks pretty good. And then when you get him out of that, it looks terrible. That's been the Tua experience in this offense for quite some time. So to me, I come out of this one, you know, if you've got Jalen Waddle, you got any of these guys, you know, whatever on the Miami Dolphins, I don't really care that Quinn Ewers is starting right now. Like this, to me, I think it's pretty much business as usual in this Dolphins offense. I don't know. Do you think I'm overreacting to, or maybe I'm being too harsh on Tua, any of that here?
No, I don't think you're overreacting at all. It almost goes back to the point you were making earlier, and which is why I bought into it, of they need a quarterback that can be able to create out of structure. And so it's not to say that Malik Willis would be that guy for them, but we were just talking about that game from last night where, yeah, if you are pressured, can you wind up creating a throw that at least moves the chains, or you can float one to your wide receiver for a touchdown, or can you scramble for another first down or two or more like first downs? Those are the things that Tua, especially because of his concussion history, he couldn't do. And we don't know if Quinn Ewers really has that in his bag at all. So trying to find that quarterback that would allow, I would say, Mike McDaniel to open up the playbook a little bit, but also even when things break down or when he's when the quarterback doesn't have this specific spot, this specific read to go to, do you have a quarterback that can create out of structure? And I don't see them having that right now. So yeah, they do need to be able to add a guy, not necessarily Malik Willis, but somebody like that, that can do those things out of structure that their current quarterback room can't do.
Yeah, I'm interested in what the Dolphins do this offseason. You know, it sounds like they're going to keep Mike McDaniel, and they might have to keep Tua, as you mentioned, for salary reasons. That should be nice and awkward. We'll see how that goes, but we got plenty of time to talk about that. Let's get to the next game here. We mentioned it earlier. Disappointing game for the Bills from a pass game standpoint, but they win the football game. Bills 23, Browns 20. On the offense here, you know, yeah, there's James Cook just smirking away as we're showing on the YouTube stream here, because he's awesome. 16 carries for 117 yards, another catch for 17 yards. He scored twice. He's awesome. He's electric. The passing game is not awesome. And I know the Browns defense is great, of course, and this is a total dead horse issue to talk about this Bills pass catcher group, but I just can't believe that what we're showing on the screen here right now is from an AFC contender. I mean, Josh Palmer runs the most routes on the team. He ran a route on 74% of the dropbacks. He was targeted on 5.9% of those routes for a cool 0.12 yards per route run. Like Tyrell Shavers, nothing. Khalil Shakir, he's doing his thing. Of course, we know who Khalil Shakir is. The tight end room didn't make plays as they have done previously. That didn't happen here. And we're talking about like Brandon Cooks running 30% of the routes. It's just, I'm not to say like Josh Allen was perfect today or anything like that. It's just outrageous what they're running out in the wide receiver room. And let me just give you guys some free social media advice out there. Chris, you can use this. Anyone else, if you want to get some engagement on your account, you know, whatever, I'm not saying it's going to be big, you know, don't try to pay your rent with this. Just tweet about the Bills wide receivers, because the Bills fans will pick it up. They're even though they win this game and they're doing, they are 11-4, you know, they're going to go to playoffs, whatever, beat the Patriots last week. They are just so mad about this wide receiver room. They hate Brandon Bean for it, probably because he talked down to everybody on that radio interview. Every time I tweet about this, it's just a couple Bills content creators will share it. Bills fans will be in there. So this is a little free social media advice out there. If you're looking to get some engagement, you can farm it by talking about the Bills wide receivers and how bad that unit is.
The almost immediate, because I was looking at that exact same page in True Media, putting together my notes for this game. And it's almost, it's the reaction. It's the Home Alone meme where he's looking at Buzz's girlfriend. And it's like, woof. Like looking at this, like what is going on here? Brandon Cooks getting meaningful targets in a game in 2025. And of course, the one target that he gets goes clanging off of his hands. And if you've got Joshua Palmer running the most routes because they don't know what to do with Keon Coleman at this point, because they can't even have him active on game days for the second time this year. So it's just, it's just an absolute mess. And this is on a team that, like you were just saying, I mean, they're supposed to be legitimate Super Bowl contenders. Everybody's looking at the AFC being completely wide open. I mean, no Patrick Mahomes. We have to see if we're assuming that Lamar Jackson is going to get into the playoffs. And of course, Burrow and the rest of, and the Bengals are going to be out. This was supposed to be his year, the potential for him to have back-to-back MVP campaigns. And these are the people that he's throwing the ball to. These are the people that, especially if this is, if this foot thing is going to be an issue moving forward, we're going to be reliant on his arm, which means we're going to be reliant on these wide receivers. And Dawson Knox had to go to the medical tent for, I think, a short period of time in this game, which also explains why his output wasn't all that great. And we just mentioned earlier about Dalton Kincaid coming into this
game too.
Yeah, but then Dawson, and then of course Dalton Kincaid, or to quote Pat Thorman, a Dalton first aid, which is hilarious. Love Pat Thorman. But he comes into this game missing two practices early in the week, so we can't even get the same type of tight end usage that we were hoping from in week 15. So it's problematic to say that you should even rely on, I'm hoping nobody's relying on any of the Bills pass catchers from a fantasy standpoint, but even if for Bills fans, relying on these guys, because you're going to have to once they get into the playoffs, I'd be somewhat concerned if I was part of Bills Mafia, if we're expecting them to play meaningful football in January.
Right, because this Browns defense is a good defense, and you just see, hey, you don't have outside wide receivers. It's kind of hard to beat good defenses when you don't have guys who can get open. Yeah, when they showed the graphic during the game about Keon Coleman, inactive coach's decision, Gabe Davis, inactive coach's decision, I was like, remember when Bills fans had talked themselves back into Gabe Davis, like being the savior of this room, even though he was pushed out of town? And it's just like, that's how, and like, I'm not making fun of the fans. That's how desperate they are for something. That's how desperate the Bills are. They re-signed Gabe Davis. I mean, and played him. He was leading the team in routes a couple of weeks ago. It's just crazy. Yes. what this room has become. It's so unfortunate. And yeah, from a fantasy perspective, you're not starting any of these guys, obviously, but you're starting the quarterback, and look at what happens. You start the quarterback, it's a good defense, he has nobody that can get open for him. You see the results on this one, so it's unfortunate. On the Browns side of things here, just two notes really to share. I mean, I don't have a ton of notes on the Browns offense and, you know, Shedeur Sanders and all that, but Harold Fannin scored twice, once through the air and once on the ground, so that was good to see. I think Shedeur had good moments, he had bad moments. The really rough moment, unfortunately, is Quinshon Judkins dislocated his ankle and fractured his fibula, according to Kevin Stefanski. Yeah. So this is a major, he's also being evaluated for a knee injury as well. It's a major, major injury here for Quinshon Judkins that obviously puts his 2026 season into real doubt here.
Yeah, exactly. And no, I'm not interested in picking up Raheem Sanders, who came in and played on about 52% of the snaps afterwards, because we still saw Travion Williams mixing in from a pass game standpoint. And of course, the Shedeur Sanders of it all. Not to say that he played especially bad. I think it was just more just rookie stuff from Sanders in this particular game. I mean, the interception, the first one, it was off of a tipped pass that was supposed to go to Judkins. And then Joey Bosa just makes a really good play and tips another one that for, so I'm not taking away like too much from Sanders, but still, if this is going to be somewhat of a, I would say, incomplete offense or inconsistent offense at best, I'm not trying to pick up the running back too, even if this is an offense that's still more predicated on the running game than the pass game.
Nah, I mean, shoot, Quinshon Judkins' fantasy outlook had been kind of trending down with the offensive line injuries and just the chaos in the Browns offense there. So, yeah, not really trying to start any of the backups there. Maybe if Dylan – no, yeah, forget it. Okay, next game up here, Texans 23, Raiders 21. The Texans, very middling start to this game, never truly got cooking on offense, but did just enough here. C.J. Stroud, 170 passing yards and a touchdown. No Woody Marks in this one, so it was Jawar Jordan leading the way with 15 carries for 53 yards and another five catches on five targets.
Yeah, it really was just us hoping to see like if Nico Collins can continue to do stuff from a pass game standpoint, because I would assume that's where most fantasy managers were looking towards. Didn't have the boom game that anybody was really hoping for. I mean, just four catches for 59 yards, you'll take that, but still we were hoping to see a bit more. But the Raiders came in honestly kind of charged from a defensive standpoint. I mean, multiple three and outs. I mean, getting to CJ Stroud, having him flustered and getting off his first read. So really until they were able to sustain enough drives, enough such that he wound up getting the Dalton Schultz touchdown, the short one, like towards the back end of that game. I mean, it was kind of a up and down type of game where we've at least assumed coming into this that the Texans should be able to control this one almost throughout the entirety of the contest.
On the Raiders side of it, huge shout out to Ashton Gentry here. I mean, the Raiders are the Raiders, but man, I hand up, did not see this one coming at all by any means. It was probably Ashton Gentry's best game of the season. 188 yards from scrimmage was a season high. I think it was his second best fantasy output of the day. Our buddy Ian Harditz, I saw him tweet this. Ashton Gentry's long touchdown run was his first run of 15 plus yards since week four of this season. So yeah, I thought it was a clear stay away spot from Ashton Gentry. Could not have been more wrong about that. He made a big play in the passing game, made a big play on the ground, and that was enough. Several also just like kind of positive sustaining runs here of 5+ yards as well. So great game by Ashton Gentry. Good to see. Obviously the Raiders still lose this one.
Yeah, especially when, I mean, during the earlier parts of the game, it's a pick six from Derek Stingley. I was kind of watching that from the side and just like, oh, well, this game's over. It's a wrap. There's just no way that the Raiders are going to continue to at least play well enough to keep things in this, keep up in this game. And of course, they're extending drives, having these explosive plays. Your boy Jack Besh also mixing in for a couple of first downs like here and there. So it's just, there was enough there that it was like, okay, they're trying to make this a game. But of course, it's Ashton Gentry and of course, Brock Bowers as well. The two guys that, I don't know, there are a couple other guys that work for this network that were on a show earlier today saying don't start either of those.
Yeah. Good process. We'll
burn the tape on that, okay? It's your best players play when the light shines the brightest. And of course, Ashton Gentry and Brock Bowers do that for their fantasy managers when they need it the most.
I know. I love it. I said, if you're playing Ashton Gentry, you're really hoping that he's going to get some just cheap receptions in this one. He caught one pass. Yeah. It just happened to be for 60 yards and a touchdown. So there you go.
I
continue to say there's a lot of players on this Raiders offense that I'm interested in seeing in a different system. You know, buying a different offensive line, different quarterback. A lot needs to change for the Raiders, but they've got some guys to build around on this offensive side. I wouldn't be writing takes in pen about any of these young guys. We just need to get them away from this coaching staff. Final game here to talk about in this section, Falcons 26, Cardinals 19, a game that only fantasy football players would care about. Let's talk about the Falcons side of things first. Drake London ran around on 80.6% of the dropbacks, so no limitations for him. He was targeted on 27.6% of those routes, but just didn't look like himself to me. So that made Kyle Pitts the guy to catch 7 passes for 57 yards. All of his receptions coming between the numbers, according to Next Gen Stats. He was particularly effective on in-breaking routes, 6 of 54 in the touchdown on in-breaking routes. So he kind of was the guy that showed up in that role that does overlap with Drake London on those in-breakers in this offense.
Yeah, and I mean, of course, most folks were looking to Bijan Robinson in order to create the most production for the Falcons from an offensive standpoint. And of course, there was I think it was their second or third drive. It's a 41-yard pass to Bijan Robinson, an 11-yard run from Bijan Robinson, and then a 13-yard touchdown pass to Bijan Robinson. That was all that they needed in order to score. So I think that offensive formula, that worked, clearly. And they should just continue to do that moving forward. But outside of that, continuing to see Kyle Pitts perform well in this offense, that kind of to your point, after Drake London, even like throughout that game, seeing how it still seemed like the knee injury or the PCL injury was continuing to bother Drake London. Pitts coming up for a number of strong catches across the middle of the field, converting on multiple third downs. I think that's where at least seeing that development from Pitts and not just just him getting a bunch of volume without having Drake London there, but even with London back and also with the rest of the offense still kind of trying to find its way without having Michael Penix under center, Pitts kind of showing up and being essentially the focal point of that passing game. It has been a positive thing, or at least a positive development for Pitts, where I know a lot of folks and even potentially fans of the team have been kind of out on him, just not really seeing him get back to where he was at from his rookie campaign.
Good game from Kyle Pitts, elite game from Bijan Robinson, just one of the best players in the NFL, period. I just want to see him on a good offense in a good ecosystem. And Drake London will be healthier next week. They play the Rams next week in Atlanta. So that's going to be a tough one. A Rams team coming off a loss on Thursday night, that's going to be a tough one from them. On the Cardinals side of things here, if you have Trey McBride on your fantasy team, this is the first time I feel bad for you all season. I mean, what a horror show of a game here from Trey McBride. And it wasn't like, oh, the wide receivers are popping off. Nope. Actually, Michael Wilson had one big kind of, I mean, I'm not going to call it a fluky play. It was a great catch by him, but he had to make like a wild catch on the ground. He only ran around on 61% of the dropbacks. Marvin Harrison, 45%. Like, those guys were rotating. Meanwhile, Trey McBride runs the most routes on the team. He comes away with 4.7 fantasy points. And instead, it's Elijah Higgins, the number two tight end, runs 21 routes, plays 29 snaps. And he's just getting a bunch of usage here. A bunch of like just short targets underneath. I was like, right position, wrong guy. I mean, I actually don't have any Trey McBride teams. But man, I mean, it is just, if you have Trey McBride on your fantasy team, this is like a nightmare that you're going to have to relive for a long time.
Exactly. And nobody really saw this coming. If anything, our discussions earlier today and for most folks throughout the week was going to be, well, how does Marvin Harrison Jr. returning try to impact how many targets might go to Trey McBride? Nobody was talking about Elijah Higgins also being a part of this calculation. So it's just, now do we have to factor him in moving forward with this more of a 1 week thing? So now it's just, yeah. So now that just confuses a lot of, but I'm not trying to take too much away from it. I do think that they were able to exploit part of the Falcons coverage. I'm not trying to say that this is going to be a thing moving forward, but still, it's just one of those things where there was nothing to really to give us the idea that this was going to be a thing. But now it's just, now that it's happened, it's now it's going to be stuck in everybody's mind moving forward. But also, I mean, not seeing Jacoby Brissett chuck the ball over 40 times in a game, that was different on top of that. So it's just the pass volume, Elijah Higgins, it was just, I would say, a multitude of things that were just different about this entire offense that will probably have folks scratching their head, and hopefully we can just forget it and move on to week 17, assuming they can make it through their week 16 matchup.
Well, if you don't make it through week 16 with Trey McBride, I think what you're going to have to position your commissioner to do is maybe retro, because he plays the Bengals next week, does Trey McBride. So what you're going to want to do is try to retroactively award yourself maybe 30% of his fantasy points from week 17 into your week 16 matchup.
If you can like get around
30-35%, that should be all it takes. And then the rest of the production in week 17 that remains in your lineup. You guys can work that out amongst yourself, but that's probably your best hope.
I think it's a good rule.
If you have Trey McBride. Yeah. Yeah. We'll see what happens. All right. That does it for the games that we care. We sort of care about, and we'll be right back right after this quick break. Now let's get into the games that could have been an email. We're going to rapid fire these ones because there's a lot of dust balls here. Starting with the other Saturday night game, Eagles 29, Commanders 18. Chris, did we learn anything in this game? To me, this went exactly to script here. The Eagles did what they did. The right players got the football, whatever, and they went crazy on a hapless Commanders team, which essentially Dan Quinn waved the white flag at one point punting in this game, and then had the gall to say afterwards, well, we're going to see them again in a couple weeks because they went for it on the two-point conversion. The fight broke out, which is probably most of the interesting thing that happened. Like, buddy, you're going to be seeing their backups in week 18. yeah, get ready to get your revenge on Tanner McKee and Tank Bigsby. Ooh, boy. Like, that just bizarre stuff from Washington here.
Well, yeah, and especially if Marcus Mariota's injury is a little bit like longer term, they're going to be starting Josh Johnson or somebody like that in week 18. So right. It's like, who cares at this point, my guy? But yeah, I mean, to your point, the right guys got the targets. Terry McLaurin still at least gets you a floor type of game, especially with that long catch. I think it was about 30, 40 yards that he winds up beating like the Eagles coverage on the perimeter for a long game. So he got there, especially given that the Eagles defense. But of course, from the Philadelphia side of things, AJ Brown gets there for with his target share. Devonta Smith catches a long, at least a decent length touchdown catch. So he gets there. But it comes, and also Dallas Goedert, who everybody had been riding over the past couple of weeks, just 32 yards. He also falls into the end zone. So it's just everybody. I don't think we really learned anything, I mean, from either offense. It's just the right guys got the ball. And then, of course, and also Ja'Cory Kroski-Merritt and Chris Rodriguez wind up getting the end zone. Pretty much everybody that we were starting from a fantasy standpoint got you what you needed for this week.
Next game up, Saints 29, Jets 6. We already extolled the virtues of Chris Olave earlier. I think that's the biggest takeaway from the Saints side here, other than another really nice game from Tyler Shuck. It wasn't anything crazy here, but just another solid, competent game. And the Saints are kind of the friskiest bad team at the end of the season here.
Offensive rookie of the year, Tyler Shuck. Maybe.
It's a pretty, I mean, I don't think so, but I think does he have the most wins among rookie? I mean, he's got to have the most wins among rookie quarterbacks this year. I think he does.
Yeah, so that's why I'm just.
It is a wide open field. Ibuka completely fell off. Like McMillan has been up and down, but he I would assume he's probably has to be the favorite. Recording this obviously during Sunday Night Football. Travion Henderson's going to have something to say about this, but I think it probably doesn't happen. But the fact that we're talking about, like, you're saying that, and it's not, I'm laughing you off the set here. Shuck has played really well, and like Juwan Johnson shows back up here with 8 catches because Devon Vele is out, you know. So there's something going on that Saints side in the passing game, particularly. Kellen Moore, I think, designs the offense really well. Not a lot going on for the New York Jets here. I mean, we're starting Brady Cook. We're maybe getting some Adonai Mitchell catches, but that's about it over there.
Brady Cook had 0.8 air yards per attempt in the first half. 9 total air yards for Brady Cook in the first 2 quarters of that game. So it didn't matter if you had A.D. Mitchell, you're trying to start him. There's just nothing to go around if your quarterback is not going to pass downfield or trying to be as aggressive that you would want. So no, there's just nothing there for the Jets.
Vikings 16, Giants 13. The Vikings get a win here. Comes at a cost because J.J. McCarthy got injured again. This time, a hand injury here in this one. Was kind of having an up and down game anyways. Had an interception, had a touchdown. So it wasn't a whatever game from J.J. McCarthy, but he obviously is not able to finish the contest. He did get the ball to Justin Jefferson a little bit. That was nice to see. And on the Giants side of things, man, Jackson Dart scored 0.02 fantasy points. Which is 0.02. I mean, what are we talking about? And to me, Chris, like, at one point they it had been a minute since they like attempted a pass. They dropped back and I think he got sacked, but it took a long time. He completed 7 passes of 13 in this game to Jackson Dart, ran the ball for 7 yards through an interception. I swear to God, Mike Kafka's trying to run the clock out on the season he's just trying to sim to the end just so Jackson Dart doesn't get hurt again.
Yeah, that the Giants, they were averaging around 64 plays per game through weeks like 4 through 10. But then after Dart wound up missing a game with a concussion, down to 56 plays per game over the last 3, just ran 48 in this game against the Vikings. Like you were just mentioning, 5 pass attempts for Jackson Dart in the first half and just 1 completion for 2 yards because he's still taking so many hits in this game. I think he wound up taking 4 or 5 quarterback hits with a couple of sacks mixed in there as well. So it's just, they're trying to make sure that they get their franchise quarterback out of this season without having to go to the blue tent at least once or twice per game. And he's at least healthy going into the 2026 season. And hopefully next year, Neighbors is back, Scadabo is back, and then we can just forget about what's going on with the Giants from an offensive standpoint for 2026 or 2025 rather.
Last game here, Titans 26, Chiefs 9. It's crazy we're just at a point where the Chiefs just aren't even worth talking about here. Gardner Minshew, the concern is that he tore his ACL after Patrick Mahomes just tore his ACL last week. That left Chris Oladokun to come in here. Not familiar with Chris's work. He is a 7th round pick, the 241st overall pick. Back in the 2022 NFL draft, he was drafted by the Pittsburgh Steelers. So he's been hanging around in the NFL for a minute. I mean, I guess he's going to start games unless there's another 40-plus-year-old quarterback who wants to come and make some ceremonial starts for the Chiefs like Phillip Rivers did for the Colts. But that's where the Chiefs are at this point. And the Titans were able to have a lot of success with their running backs here. 100 yards on the ground for Tony Pollard. A kind of rushing touchdown, I believe, for Chigakwankwo. Was that counted as a rushing touchdown? I'll reconfirm that. But Tajay Spears also scored as well.
Yeah, my biggest note for the Titans is just if you can give Cam Ward some time and some help from a pass catching standpoint, he's going to win the Titans some games in 2026. It's just the second game all season with Ward's pressure rate under 25%. His highest completion percentage of the season at 75%. And it's just, it's shots to Chigakwankwo, Chim Dike like pitching in, Elik Eomaner also making some tough catches. I mean, this young pass catching core, I think probably one of the more interesting offenses to try and study and project what's going to happen with them. Assuming, I mean, they're definitely going to have to make the switch at head coach and play caller, what they do from a free agency standpoint, if they try and beef up that offensive line. So it's just, I think the foundation, I think from what we've seen from Cam Ward, I think the foundation is there. But really interested to see what they do over this offseason.
Yeah, it was passing touchdown to Chigakonkwo. He also threw one to Chim DK, did Cam Ward. I think DK is a keeper as a speed slot player, and obviously he's a great return man. But to me, if I'm Tennessee, I'm not saying like, oh, you know, maybe one of these guys. No, I'm trying to really add some dudes in this pass catcher core, and maybe Io Manor and DK can and Gunnar Helm can be kind of interesting players here. But I don't know that they've stumbled onto any superstar there. So I'm definitely trying to go hard in the paint and surround Cam Ward with some good players next year, because I do think I agree with you. When you can give him some time, you know, and he's not in a negative game script in 2 seconds, I think there's actually some promise there. Chris Allen, there's more than promise with you, buddy. Another great show with you, man. Started off insane coming out of that Lions-Steelers game, but I like to think that we rounded out a good recap show here. Appreciate you as always, man.
Of course, man, and we'll get to do it in championship week in week 17. Of course, there's going to be all the more chaos next week, so happy to do it tonight, and we'll do it again next week, brother.
Shout out to all of you who joined us live as well. It was a blast. We will be back tomorrow on Monday. Justin Boone joins me for the next edition of the Fantasy Trust Meter. We're going to look at players that you've been counting on. We debate if we can trust them in the Fantasy Football Championships Week 17. All that happens live right here, 5 p.m. Eastern on YouTube. Until then, we are out.